So in life, we go through the various moods of the mind. The mind is all the time up and down. Sometimes I'm depressed, I'm lazy in tamas. Sometimes I'm very active, passionate, full of desire, anger in rajas. And sometimes I'm very peaceful in sattva, maybe after some meditation or prayers or listening to some discourse from some acharya or swamiji. Our mind is very peaceful and we seem helpless. I have no control over my mind. My mind just dominates my thinking and I am just up and down. What can I do to control my mind? How can I keep myself in balance? How can I keep myself calm and not disturbed by world? Because the world will constantly give you joys and sorrows. The world will constantly hit you. But how can I maintain that balance? How were all these great Mahatmas and sages and saints? Look at Mirabai and look at Tukaram. Look at Jesus. How many problems they had in their life and still they were able to maintain their equanimity, their balance. How were they able to do that? That's what Arjuna wants to know. And he asks in the 21st verse that you have told me about the three gunas, sattva, which is pure, rajas, which is passion, and tamas, which is laziness, fanaticism. But are there any people who are beyond these? Are there such people? Do they exist? And if they do, what are the marks of such an individual? How can I identify him? How does such an individual conduct herself in the world? How is she able to function despite all the problems that the gunas create? And how can I, O Lord, O teacher, how can I go personally beyond these three gunas? So these three questions were asked. And last week we heard Sri Krishna's response where he said in 22 and 23 that a wise individual sees sattva, rajas and tamas coming at all times. You cannot all the time be in sattva or rajas. Times will vary, but he does not get attached, does not get fascinated and does not despair when sattva is gone and I am in rajas or tamas. He is able to maintain his equanimity. Udasin vat asina. He seems to be indifferent and these gunas do not disturb him. And he can see that my mind is functioning, my body is functioning, the whole world is functioning, but I am beyond that. He is able to maintain his state of equanimity. And we had studied that in detail. If anybody wishes to listen to that talk again, you can go to firstpower.info. So today now Sri Krishna is continuing. He's painting a painting of this man of wisdom. How does this person function? And so last week we got some broad outline. It's like when you're painting a picture of a man or a woman, you first make the outlines. You just put the sketch and then inside you put paint and you put colors and you put more details, how her sari looks and how her earrings are. So all the additional descriptions of this person of wisdom are given to us by the Lord today and we shall discuss them. Very, very beautiful verses. Pay attention because these are very practical, very useful. I at least found that this is something that I can apply. Soon as I walk out of this room, I can apply these verses. So verse number 24 in chapter 14. So this wise individual is sama dukkha sukha, in joy and sorrow sama. He is the same, balanced. Swastha, swastha means established in himself or herself. Now the next one is very interesting. It says sama loshta ashma kanchana. For a wise person, whether it's a piece of mud or a jewel or a gold, for him it is all the same. So what? He doesn't know the difference between a piece of mud, a diamond, and a gold. Yep, that's what apparently they say. He's the same in all. You give him all three, it is the same for him. Tulya priya apriya. So priya means things I like that are conducive. Apriya means thing I dislike. Tulya. For him, they are the same. They are the same whether you give him candy or you give him something horrible, bitter. Yeah, for them, he is the same. And dhira. Dhira is a beautiful word which means he is very stable, established. Tulya ninda atma samstuti. And tulya ninda atma samstuti. And somebody may praise him, stuti. Oh, you are the greatest person. Or somebody may say, you are the most useless person. He is the same. So from listening to this, we get the idea that this person is dead. You know, he's a stone. You can praise him, he no difference. You can criticize him, no difference. You can give him gold, he just gold. You give him a piece of rock, okay. Joy and sorrow, yeah. What kind of life is that? I mean, he doesn't enjoy, you know, things are fine. He doesn't get happy. Seems like I don't want this kind of life. You know, why is it Krishna praising such an individual? To me, he seems like a useless stone, just sitting somewhere in one corner, you know, theek hai, everything. No, it's not that. When we look into more detail, especially listening to Swami Chinmayananda's commentary, and those of you who have this book, please read it in more detail when you go home, you can see the beauty of these verses, how powerful these are. So he says, sama dukkha sukha. In joy and sorrow, he is the same. Because joy and sorrow come to everybody. There is nobody in this world who does not have joy at one time, sorrow at another time. And our problem is that we are all the time up and down, happy, oh joy, happy, happy. I run around laughing and joking and sharing with the world. And then sorrow comes, oh, I'm depressed. I sit in my house and cry. And I become a victim of the circumstances. Whatever circumstances the world throws at me, I become happy, unhappy. And then my mind is all the time agitated, sometimes happy, sometimes not. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, Sri Krishna beautifully says, Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukha dukha daha agama apaino anityaha tantitikshasva bharata. O Arjuna, Matra sparshastu kaunteya. O Arjuna, Matra sparshastu, the contact with the sense objects, whatever objects, there may be things you see, hear, smell, taste, touch. Shitoshna sukha dukha daha. And they will give you sometime heat, sometime cold. In Bakersfield, sometime it will be 105, 110. Sometime it will be 30. That is the nature of what can you do about it? What is the use to complain? That is, you know, you're living in Bakersfield, that is how. If you don't like it, then move to San Diego, you know, where you have 80 degrees all the year. If you are here, accept it and say, okay, heat, okay, I'll turn on the air conditioner. Cold, I'll put on something warm, but there's no use to complain. Shitoshna sukha dukha daha. And these objects will give you joy and sorrow. But tan titiksha, titiksha, develop fortitude, develop courage, be able to withstand. Why? Agama apaino anityaha. These joys and sorrows, agama apaino, they come and go. Anitya, they are temporary. No joy lasts forever. So don't become over-attached, overjoyed. And no sorrow will last forever. No matter what kind of sorrow you have, sooner or later it will go away. So if it is there, just bear it and say, okay, Lord, that's okay. It's my karmas because of which I am suffering. It's okay. The moment you develop an acceptance and faith in the Lord, the sorrow automatically becomes half. No matter what kind of sorrow it is, once you accept it and say, oh Lord, that's okay, I'm fine with it, immediately your sorrow gets reduced. And similarly, when joy comes, don't get overjoyed, but say, okay, that's nice. I'm good. I'm happy. I mean, it's not that you just walk around like a stone. When things are going fine, it's okay, but do not get too attached to the happiness and do not get too depressed. Why do people get happy and unhappy? I get happy when things come that are conducive to my vasanas, to my desires. and things that are not conducive to my vasanas, I become unhappy. And the same object gives joy to one person and sorrow to another. We think that the joy is in the object. Like if I eat an ice cream, it is joy. Or if I have a pizza, it is joy. But if I get eggplant, I say it is not joy. So we give joy and sorrow in the object, but it is actually in the individual, like a cigarette. Just an example of a cigarette. Now, there are two people sitting on a park bench, you know, and one person hasn't had a cigarette in 12 hours, you know, he was working. And so now he takes out the cigarette and he, you know, taps it on the cigarette box and then he rolls it. And then he takes out his, you know, his lighter and he's ready to light it. He's putting his every cell of his body wants nicotine. And the guy next door hates smoke, you know, and he says, oh, my God, now he's going to light. Now he's going to light. And then he'll light the cigarette. You know, he takes a puff and his whole joy in his face. And when he blows the smoke, this guy's crying. Oh, you know, get the smoke. But a wise person who is sitting across will watch both of them and say, look, this person is happy because of cigarette and this person is sad or sorrowful. So the happiness or sorrow is not in the cigarette. It is in my desires, in my tendencies. If I love cigarettes, it gives me joy. If I hate cigarettes, it gives me sorrow. So a wise person says, okay, there are some people in life who smoke, they enjoy, let them. You know, they are harming themselves. Some people who don't. I don't have to get so affected. You know, if I can move away, I move away. If not, I accept it. So that a person who is under the play of his vasanas is constantly up and down. But a person who is wise is called swastha. The next word is swastha. Swastha is a very, very beautiful word. Swastha means, stha means sitting, established. Swa means in himself. He's sitting and established in himself. That, now you say, what do you mean sitting or rest? I am always. It's a very, very beautiful story I had read. It's very nice. There was this 4 or 5 year old girl and she wanted to sit in somebody's lap. And she had her mother, father and grandmother. And they were, mother, father and grandmother had to take out a newsletter, you know, in the like a school newsletter. So they were all busy. This was in the old days. There were no computers. So father is writing, mother is typing. And then the grandmother is folding and putting it in the envelopes. And so he goes to the mother. Mommy, mommy, she goes, I want to sit in your lap. No, no, child, I'm so busy. I don't have time. She goes to the daddy. Daddy, daddy, I want to sit in your lap. Can't you see I'm writing? I'm so busy. Okay, grandma, can I sit in your lap? Grandma says, sorry, darling, I am folding these papers. I just don't have time. So she says, okay, if none of you have time, I'll sit in my own lap. And she sits on the floor and she's very happy. She says, I'm sitting in my own lap. If you are sitting in somebody else's lap, the moment that person moves, you get disturbed. If the person gets up, you fall off. But if you are sitting in your own lap, you don't depend on anybody else to comfort you. So that is the wise person. Because most of us, we find that we depend on something or somebody, somebody's lap. May not be a lap, but I depend on my spouse or my child or my this or that to give me that little joy, that little sorrow. And when that person withdraws that joy, that then I get so depressed, I get so sorrowful. But if you get comfortable in your own self, if you can sit in your own lap, then you don't need anybody's lap. If you can sit in the lap of the God, the best is just sit, say, I'm in the lap of, and which we are actually. Right now, all of us are sitting in the lap of God. Where are we sitting? We are sitting in his lap or her lap, if you believe in the Mother Goddess. But just say, I am constantly, just close your eyes. Actually, this morning, it was so beautiful. The sun was rising and I was standing there and I just closed my eyes. And when the sunlight was coming, actually, before that, it was the moon around 5. I woke up around 5. And the moonlight was so beautiful. It was a crescent moon. And you feel that light. It's just surrounding you. It's like you are enveloped in that Lord Shiva's mercy, his glory, his compassion. So when you feel yourself in the lap of the Lord, you're surrounded with that beauty, that glory, that compassion. Then you don't need anybody else. That is called swastha. Then it comes a very interesting one. Sama loshta ashma kanchana. He says for this wise person, you give him a piece of mud You give him a jewel or you give him the gold, it is the same. Now he said, now that I don't agree with. How can it be the same? You know, how can you mean a 2-carat diamond and a gold coin and a piece of is the same? Yes, that's what Krishna is saying. I'm not saying that. So let us think about it. Let us say, when I was thinking, I remembered about Swami Ishwarananda. Let us see his example, where you can see how these wise people live. Swami Ishwarananda is the Acharya in Los Angeles. He comes here every 3 months. And I was thinking about his life around 88, 90. He was a very successful computer programmer. He had finished his degree in engineering computer, and he had an excellent job. Now think about it. In those days, computers were just coming. And if he had stayed in that field for another 25 years, where would he have been? He probably would have been head of some big software company somewhere in Bangalore, maybe with branches all over, maybe dealing with the US, all doing all this outsourcing and all. And then he would have been living in a nice bungalow somewhere, have 2-3 cars, drivers, chauffeur, servants, big bank balance. And he would have been very rich and, in our words, very successful. And he gave all that up. He gave up all that and he said, I'm going to join the mission. And he, since then, for the last 25 years, he lives in a small room in Kashi. He wears just 2 pairs of clothes, the orange 3 pairs. He wears one, washes one, and changes. There's not a single penny in his bank, does not have a car. He has to depend on people to feed him, to take him around. Now, which one is better? In our mind, the first one is indeed better. But if you ask him, the joy the wise person gets when they become one with the Lord, when they turn their mind towards the Lord and serve the world. Look at his life. He's constantly traveling all over the world, giving lectures, advising people. His administrative abilities are phenomenal. So for him, all the wealth in the world cannot equal the joy that he gets when he sits in meditation and gets that inner experience. So that is what they're saying. It does not mean that he does not value money. He's head of the mission in Los Angeles, and they keep expanding. First, they had a small property. Then they bought 2 properties, and then they combined 2 into a third one, which is about $5 or $6 million. So he knows that to raise money, $5 or $6 million takes effort. So they do fundraisers, they organize events, the Bal Vihar and donations and all. They do all that. But not a penny of that he keeps for himself. Everything goes into the mission, to expand the mission's activities, to serve more and more. And now the Los Angeles mission has so many branches all over, from Thousand Oaks to Orange County to Simi Valley. Every part of LA, they have these Chinmaya mission activities because of the presence of one Acharya, Swami Ishwarananda, because of whom the mission has grown so much. Even Bakersfield, he has been a significant part of our growth. So the point is that these people know that money is required, but they do not get attached to it. They do not say that it is for me and I. The money is needed, but it is needed for them. So money, if it is used well in the service of others, becomes an instrument. But when it is kept with just I myself will keep it, then the way they describe it is money is like water. Suppose you keep water in a pond, not moving. What happens? It becomes putrid. It becomes green and moss. But when the water is running, then it serves people, becomes a river. So money, either you can just keep it in the bank and just let it grow, or you can use it to serve mankind. And that's what they mean, that wealth should be used for service. You should not get so fascinated or attached by wealth. Sama loshta ashma kanchana. Because for us from India especially, money is so important. We are so attached to it. So that's why Sri Krishna is telling us that don't make money your master. Let it be your slave. Let it be an instrument for you to serve the world. But if you make money your master, then it will sit on your head and will take over your whole life. And then your whole life is geared just towards acquiring, possessing, multiplying, growing, cheating, hurting others. So I may get more money. So that's why he says, Sama loshta ashma kanchanah. For him, money has no value except if it is used to serve others. Tulya priya apriya. So you said, you mean to say he has no likes and dislikes. So Swamiji, does that mean that if I, something happens to me good, I should not get happy? I should just walk around, you know, with my face all still and depressed? Is that what you mean? We are not saying that. What we are saying is that if you get happy when things are, your mind is happy, then be ready that tomorrow my mind will be sorrowful. And then you'll be up and down. The example they give is like a lighthouse. Now there are waves in the ocean, waves, high and low. And there is a piece of wood, a log. So what will happen when the wave goes up? It goes up. When the wave goes down, it goes down. But a lighthouse, which is firmly anchored to the floor of the ocean, no matter how hard the waves hit it, no matter how much, the lighthouse remains firm because it is firmly anchored to the floor of the ocean. No matter thousands of waves may come, storms may come, nothing happens to the lighthouse. But not only that, the lighthouse is a guide to others. It shows other ships with the light. Okay, this is the harbor. This is how you come in. So it guides the ship safely to the harbor. So they say, don't be like a log of wood. Be like a lighthouse, where joys and sorrows do not go up and down, but be firmly established in the knowledge of the self, that I am that consciousness. Be firmly established in your comfort with the Lord. And then such a person not only can withstand the joys and sorrows of life, can then become a prophet or become a Mahatma, or become a great saint. He becomes a Chinmayananda or a Vivekananda or a Jesus or a Buddha or a Guru Nanak. Because these people were so firmly established in the knowledge that no problems in the world could dissuade them. And they, in turn, became guide for the others. So that is what they say. Samya Tulya Priya Apriya. And be a Dhira. Dhira is a very beautiful word. Dhira means, Dhi means knowledge. So one who is firmly established in the knowledge. The word dhira comes many times in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Kathopanishad. Krishna uses the word dhira many times. In the second chapter, he says, yam hi na vyathyantyete purusham purusharshabha sama dukha sukha dhiram sama sukha dukham dhiram so amritatvaya kalpate. So this dhira, this wise person who is firmly established in the knowledge, yam hi na vyathyante, he says these objects of the world do not disturb him or her. And he's so firmly established that he remains balanced, because joys and sorrows will come. But he's established, he's like, as we said, swastha, he stays stationary in his own self, in the Lord, and in his knowledge. See, once you acquire this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, and once you start applying that, then what kind of problems can be there in this world? Nothing can be a problem. Because I am so firmly established in the idea that I am that spirit. I am the spirit who at this moment is functioning through this body. And the body will have pains and aches, will have joys and sorrows, will have success and failure, will have heat and cold. He withstands them. And such a person, amritatvaya kalpate, he becomes fit for immortality. Immortality means he then knows that I am that immortal spirit, that Om, that Brahman, that consciousness is my true nature. And I am at this moment occupying the body. And when it comes time to drop the body, he has no fear because he goes beyond the body. He goes beyond death. Another meaning of amritatvaya kalpate is that he becomes immortal because the posterity forever remembers him. Buddha 2500 years ago, Christ was lived 2000 years ago. We still remember him. We still quote them. Swami Chinmayananda left his body in 1993. But even 500 years from now, anywhere there is a Chinmaya mission, they will remember him. Vivekananda, look at Mirabai. Mirabai songs will be sung even 5000 years from now. So the point is that these saints and prophets become immortal. They are always remembered. The society remembers them with gratitude, remembers them with love. Their teachings are spread throughout the world. So that's what he says. This dhira, this wise person who is established in the knowledge is able to withstand all the joys and sorrows and becomes a lighthouse, spreads for everybody else. The world shares in the glory of that individual. Vivekananda lived for only, 32 years? And look how much work he did, how much he traveled. He came to the States, all over the India he traveled. And today Ramakrishna Mission is there all over the world. And people still remember that young, dynamic individual who came to Chicago and said, "Brothers and sisters of America." He at that moment could see, he was the first one who said that we are all brothers and sisters. Nobody ever said that. At least, you know, that way in a huge public gathering where there were thousands of people. So that's what they say, that this wise person is adhira, is established, and he becomes immortal. And then he says, tulya ninda atma samstutihi. So praise and criticism for him is the same. He does not get over, you know, what happens to us. Somebody comes and tells us, you know, you are the greatest. Immediately our ego swells up a little bit and smile comes and our head gets swollen. I am the greatest. And then tomorrow somebody says, you are the most useless person. I never seen a useless person like you. Immediately we get depressed. You know, why did this person say that? Because no matter what happens, you cannot forever get joy and sorrow. Ever. You know, there's people will never always pray. Even Mahatma Gandhi got so much criticism. Even Jesus. Even any of these saints. In fact, they had the more criticism than you and us. Look at Tukaram. Look at Mirabai. Look at Sant Gyaneshwar. How many problems they had in their life. Look at Narsimha Mehta. How many problems he had. So, honor and dishonor, praise and criticism comes. But they say, it's okay. These are just like children. The example I read from Swami Chinmayananda's commentary. He says that there is a father and his 6-year-old boy says, "Father, you are the greatest father in the whole world." Why? Because the father just brought him a toy. "You are the best, greatest." So he swells up and then he wears this t-shirt, you know, the greatest dad in the world, and all his son has made it. And then second day, his son wants a new, you know, video game that just came out. And dad says, "You can't have it." He says, "Dad, you are the worst dad in the whole world." Now within one day, from the best dad, he became the worst dad. Now does he, if he starts swelling up, "Oh, I am the greatest dad," then tomorrow when the son calls him, "You are the worst dad," then he will be depressed. But he knows that this is just a child. You know, his praise and criticism, it doesn't mean anything. It's okay. One day he will praise, one day he will. So the wise person sees all of us as children. He says, "These are children. They are just playing." And then, okay, the one time they are throwing flowers at me. Second day they will throw stones. It's okay. I am not to be affected by that. So that wisdom comes. And for a wise person, you and I are like that 5-year-old child who says it's okay. They are running around playing their little games, attached to their little things, running after this, running after that. When there is this wealth of this self-knowledge, the Lord and this Gita and the Bible and the Upanishads and all this beautiful knowledge is available, and they say, "I don't have time for Gita class. I'm too busy. You know, I have to go shopping." They will go to the Valley Plaza and spend 2 hours rather than listen to an Acharya when they come, or Swamiji's. They don't have time. So that's what our childish foolishness is, that when we have this opportunity to listen to this knowledge, to apply that in our life, we just waste it. And this opportunity won't come again. That's what he says. Out of 8.4 million species, 84 lakh yoni, out of 8.4 million, only one is human. So 8,399,999 species are non-human. There are mosquitoes and bacteria and bugs and dogs and cats. And we are so fortunate to get this beautiful human body with a, you know, with a loving mind, with a sharp intellect. And we waste that in just useless things, you know, just acquiring little shells along the ocean. And we just say, "Oh, I'm so busy, you know, I don't have time." They say, turn your opportunity, use this knowledge to change yourself and spend more time in spiritual study. Sit down and read the Gita. Sit down and listen to the commentaries. Read the Swami Chinmayananda's commentary. Start applying that in your life and you will notice such a change in your outlook towards the world. So this man of wisdom is the same as us. He also put on his pants one leg at a time. He also eats and drinks. He also does everything that you and I do. But his wisdom, his vision is different. So you don't have to change what you're doing. It's not that for tomorrow you're an engineer, suddenly you give up everything and put on orange clothes and wander in the forest. You don't need to do that. If you're an engineer or a doctor or a housewife or a teacher, you continue to do what you're doing, but do it with a different attitude. So Gita does not change your outer circumstances, just changes your vision. Arjuna in the beginning, in the first chapter, was so depressed. By the 18th chapter, he said, I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to do whatever you tell me, Krishna. I am ready, whatever you do. Krishna didn't change the battlefield. If he wanted, he could have at one stroke, just with one, destroyed all the Kauravas. All he had to do was just wish it. But he said, I'm not going to do that. I want you to change. And so we are also in this battle of this world. And all we have to do is change our vision, change how you look at the world, and the world will change with you. So that is the beauty of this outstanding verse. When I was preparing last night, I was just thanking the Lord that I have this opportunity to share it with all of you. Every day I bow down to all of you. Because of you, I get a chance to read and think about these thoughts. It's so beautiful. So thank you so much. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukhabhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om. Thank you very much.